Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Craving some great 80s music? Play Virgin Radio 80s Plus. I want your love. On DAB digital radio, on the app, on your smart speaker, and at virginradio80splus.co.uk.
I got my mind set on you.
Even if we're just dancing in the dark.
Love Chris Evans. Woo! Love the 80s.
Virgin Radio
80s Plus.
Our next guest is your hero and ours, and quite literally the gold standard of British sport. With more Olympic gold medals than any other British woman, she's heading towards cycling's final finishing line with a typically impressive turn of speed. So please welcome, in for a penny, in for a dame, Laura Kenny.
Yeah, good morning, Laura.
Hello.
This is Rachel and Vassos, and each year you're a legend.
Oh, thank you.
You are such a ledge, Dame Laura. I can't believe you're actually here in front of us. So yesterday you made the big announcement. For people who don't know, what was that?
Yeah, so I'm retiring from cycling.
Right, yeah. A big decision, of course.
I mean, yes, like it is, because obviously it's end, isn't it? It's an end of an era for me. But it didn't really feel as big a deal, I don't think, as everyone thought it was going to be for me. You know, I always kind of thought I would know, you know, like, yes, I'd get that feeling. And I just did. So for me, it was like,
where was it? Making a cup of tea, walking the dog?
I mean, no, I was at home. Yeah, I'd spoken to Jason a lot about it. And I just thought, it's either I'm not the type of person to waste people's time, you know, like, as an athlete, I am fully in. And like, I just wasn't in. I was like, I was done.
This is so interesting, because just before you came on, did you hear us talking about the cycling and cyclists?
No, go on.
So I said to Vass and Rachel, do you think it's okay if I ask Dame Laura this? And I'm asking you now, and I still don't know how I'm going to ask you this question.
Okay.
And I'm actually asking it. We've met quite a few cyclists now doing this programme.
Okay, yeah.
And Vass and I, we did 2012 from the stadium. We were there for 17 days, more or less 24/7. It was great. It was like, you know what it was like. You were there.
Yeah.
And I say we've met loads of cyclists, and they all have something in common, cyclists, but I don't know what it is.
We're mental? Yeah. Like, there's like a missing piece?
So you could say that. That's what I was alluding to. Not specifically the fact that you might be, you know, what you just said, but you do have something in common. What do you think it is?
I don't know. I do think athletes have something in common, because you wouldn't put yourself through it.
Yeah.
Like if you were completely sane.
Okay, part
you just
that.
Wouldn't.
I know that.
Okay.
Right,
okay.
Athletes, yeah. Rowers, yeah.
Yeah.
Middle distance runners,
but what's
yeah.
it about cyclists?
What is it about cyclists?
I don't know. I don't know. Is it just the way we're brought up? Like, you're in it for quite a long time,
yeah.
So you're all... I don't know.
Actually, is that no-nonsense?
No,
but you just...
Yeah,
it was your
I
response
know.
To the first question. I thought, that's what they're like. You know, well, you know, we're either all in or we're not all in, and we're just new.
Well, yeah, but is that because of this whole marginal gains thing? That's how we've been brought up.
Yeah.
And so, like, we're all targeting... And it's not gold or nothing, but it sort of does feel like that a little bit. So is that the mindset that we've been brought up in?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That
So if you're 1%... not in, it's like being 100% not in.
Well, yeah.
Because you're not all in.
Yeah, and I think also you've got to remember that lots of the races that we target are team events. So you're in it with other people.
Yeah.
So it's you're in or you're not.
And
you know
what
I mean?
Found out.
Yeah, and you're letting people down.
Yeah.
And yeah, we're not brought up like that.
And so I was saying again at the weekend about a friend of mine, he's doing his first triathlon.
Okay.
And he's all right with the swimming.
Yeah.
And he's a runner.
Okay.
He's just going to get the swimming out of the way one way or another,
okay.
Lazy legs and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And he said the cycling's been really interesting for him because it's so different as a discipline, as a movement. You know, I think rowers are quite close to cyclists from a mindset point of view, purely from an outsider. I could be getting this all wrong.
Yeah.
But even they have more sort of variability in what they do as a mechanic,
yeah,
than cyclists do. Do you think it's that thing? It's that the repetition of you know, the pose, the posture, the stance, because you're sitting on something that doesn't move. I mean,
yeah,
it moves forward and backwards, but it doesn't move up or down. Do you think it's because of that, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, maybe. I don't know. Because we're non-weight bearing compared to everything else. So, I mean, yeah, I don't know. I mean, we do have... I don't know. I do think it's like you're not a product of the system, but you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. Most of us have been part of British cycling for a really long time. And I think it's like a learnt behaviour. And yeah, you see it with the youngsters now. Maybe it's not so learnt. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I love cycling.
Oh.
Yeah, I only...
Who's your favourite cyclist?
Well, so I don't know about actual... I mean, you, because you're here.
Thank you.
VP, love VP, Bradley. I don't know many... I meant I love to cycle.
Okay.
My next-door neighbour, Russell, has got his own cycling workshop.
Oh, okay, yeah. What do they call it? A pain cave?
Yeah. And he's got a bike stand and everything, and he can fix his own cassettes. Yeah, I know that the gears are called cassettes, aren't they?
Yeah, and all this kind of stuff.
But... last year I got injured. I didn't get injured. I got skin cancer, and so I couldn't run because it wasn't advisable to do that.
Yeah.
Prehab and rehab. So I bought a bike, a Canyon gravel bike.
Okay.
And I'd never got cycling before, and I just fell. I'm not going to say head over heels because that'd be wrong, but I did fall in love. And I love cycling now.
Oh, good.
I adore it. Tell us about your first bike. Tell us about your first experience on a bike. Tell us any pivot points, any tipping points for you.
I mean, you know, everyone, I think, thinks I loved cycling from the get-go, and I actually really didn't. One of my first memories, in fact, I've got two key memories from... one from learning to ride a bike, and my sister broke her leg that day, and so I had no choice but learn to ride because my dad had to carry my sister back to our house.
Right.
So he was literally just like, you're gonna have to do it, like there's no choice in this. So that was the first day I'd learned to ride. And then the first road bike that my mum and dad bought me was a Peugeot. We've still got it.
Nice.
As well, so hopefully Albie will have that soon. Yeah.
Well kept.
But yeah, oh, it is. Yeah, well, my mum and dad are hoarders, like, right. Seriously, you should see their garage. My Albie calls it granddad's toy garage because they've got every single toy of mine from when I was a kid.
Proper toys
yeah. So anyways, they've still got this bike, and right, when you go from, and I'm little, I'm talking like eight, right, when you go from a mountain bike, obviously your hands are wide, aren't they?
Yeah.
You go to a road bike and your brakes are miles away. And we're descending down into this hill, into a roundabout.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know,
without
the
a helmet, I bet, as well.
No, I had a helmet.
You did.
Yeah,
have
my
a
mum
helmet.
And dad were always helmet.
Right.
Yeah, but you don't know the rules of the road, do you? At eight, and I just let go of the brakes because my hands are killing me, and I shouted at my mum which way. She just points.
My gosh.
And so I go down the one where the cars are oncoming.
Oh, no.
And so my mum's like, just turn. And so I turn, and you know those metal pedestrian things to stop the cars from running over pedestrians? I just ploughed straight through one. And so that was my first memory of a road bike.
Right. And then you
not
thought
great.
You'd learnt to use brakes
well,
pretty
then
quickly
I started to beat my sister.
Right.
And then that really was the, I feel like I quite like this
now. So you haven't, is there a true nature to that? Is there a natural ability to that in the beginning, do you think?
No, I don't think there was, like, I don't think it was necessarily that I was good at riding a bike. Maybe I looked like I suited a bike.
Right.
Because, like, you know, right,
like
size
geometry and
shape.
All that kind of stuff.
Yeah. But honestly, it wasn't until maybe I was 11 or 12 that I actually got picked up, and someone said, oh, she might be, like, maybe we should try her on the British cycling program.
Because there's loads of footage of Victoria with, you know, cycling everywhere, like around the world at the age of nine and beating her dad and people like that.
Yeah.
That wasn't your story.
No, because we didn't start, it wasn't in my family, because obviously Victoria's dad was a bike rider.
Yeah.
That wasn't my story. Like, my mum did choose cycling, that is how we did it, but she did it for losing weight.
Right.
She never did it competitively.
Right.
Yeah, so just really different stories.
And what was the first trophy you won? Just to have that? You must
I actually, you know, the trophy that I didn't get a trophy, but I remember the first race I won was at Track League, and it was a handicap, right? And so the track at Welling is 500 metres. So they would stick you all around the track, all at different points.
Is it banked?
And, yeah, it's banked,
right.
Yeah. And I'm like eight. So they've stuck me. I only have about 10 metres to finish. And you've got Andy Fenn, who was a pro rider, he's got to catch me in a lap. Obviously, he's never going to catch me. And then some guy just hoofs me, basically. I didn't even pedal. And then I remember crossing the line, and I got a pound. And I was like, yeah!
A pound?
Yeah, I got a pound!
Cash prize?
And I just remember thinking, yes, this is it. I can be a bike rider.
It's funny that you got more for winning your first race than you got for winning
that
your five gold medals.
That is very true. Yeah.
Isn't it? Isn't that interesting?
It's mad, that, isn't it?
So was it always track for you then?
Oh, definitely,
track.
Yeah, roads never had my heart, no.
Have you ever done a road race?
Yeah, I have. I mean, I was national champion once upon a time.
I love cycling, but I don't know much about
I did not, like, it just never had my heart. It's just, the training for road is so different to track.
Right.
And it's not a team event. As much as it is, you do have to help your teammates. You're not all in it. You don't all get a gold medal.
Right.
And so, yeah, it's just never been for me, that.
Obviously, your hobby has many things in common with you. One of them, cycling. By the way, we resurrected that picture of you snogging behind David Beckham at the Olympics. You're so funny. You're so beautiful, man.
You know, Bex actually Instagrammed yesterday. He posted, and I thought he'd use that photo. I thought it might be quite funny, right. But no, he didn't.
Oh, it's a great story. If you don't know what the story is, just look it up. We put it on our Instagram at Chris Evans TFI at Virgin Radio UK. It's gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous. What did Jason? Did you discuss? Did you have a thing? Your retirement decision, was it you? Was it a solo decision? Then you discussed it with Jason. Were you thinking about it, and then you decided with Jason? Obviously, he had a similar situation decision to face as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's my decision. It's definitely my decision.
Yeah.
But obviously, Jason had been through it. He had to make the choice 2 years ago now. It's just 2 years, and so I obviously knew the feelings and the process that he'd gone through to get to make that decision. And so I did. Obviously, I spoke to him loads about it. Because the one thing that he said to me is, you've got to remember, as an athlete, when you say you're retiring, it's done. It's not like you can have a 3-year break and come back to it. It's you're finishing, because there's no way you're getting back to the form that you were at.
Yeah, it's too big.
Before.
Well, that mountain doesn't exist. It's just too
exactly.
high.
Exactly. And it's like you're stopping on halfway up a mountain then,
yeah.
Because the mountain keeps getting bigger, times are always getting faster.
Yeah.
So he was like, you've just got to make sure that you're definitely making
done.
The
you're
right
done.
Decision. Yeah.
You're baked.
Yeah. And then, and like I say, I really was.
And did he feel the same way? Did he recognise your thought process?
Oh, he knew. Yeah, yeah. From when Monty arrived, our second little boy, he knew. Because he said I was just acting really differently, like not getting the parents round, basically doing everything, being a mum before I was an athlete. Whereas Albie's journey was very different, because I was already committing to that. I knew 100% that I was coming back to try and win again.
Right.
And so I was, from 6 weeks with Albie, I'd had my mum round to look after him so I could do a gym session. And so the process for that was just very different.
So there was talk about Paris, wasn't there? There were thoughts about Paris.
Yeah. I mean, when I say I only made this decision 10 days ago, I literally mean I stopped training 10 days ago.
Right. So 11 days ago, you still think, you know, maybe Paris.
Well, right. The biggest issue was the qualification ends at the end of April.
Right.
And so it was getting nearer and nearer, and it was coming quicker and quicker. And I was just thinking, I'm not at the same level I was at 6 months after giving birth to Albie.
Right.
And so I could see that the numbers weren't the same, and it was becoming a bigger mountain to climb.
So the writing was on the wall.
I think so, yeah. Like, yeah. When Monty came on that, like, when he was obviously born in July, I was already thinking, well, that's the game's gone. Like, because there's no way you're getting back almost exactly a year after giving birth.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, yes, lots of people would say, well, you came back 6 months after Albie.
Yeah.
Yeah, half-baked. Like, I wasn't at my best until the Olympics.
And that was then and this is now.
Exactly. It's just very different.
Wow. It's so cool to have you. Do you... Does a cyclist hang up their helmet, hang up their shoes? Because you can hang up your bike, can't you?
Yeah, I mean, you can hang up your bike, yeah.
Have you got any bikes in your house actually hung up?
Well, in the garage, yeah. I mean, they hang up in the garage.
See, I would have like one of the prize bikes in the living room, because I'm pathetic, obviously.
No, we don't have any in the house. You know, we don't even really have... In fact, I'm saying really have. We don't have any other than the medals, like... any of our jerseys or anything in the house. It's really cycling free.
No, I get that. It could be, it's good, you know, it's horses, of course, it's whatever you want to do, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I know that Formula One drivers, some Formula One drivers get to keep their cars. They have it in their contract, they get a car a year.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah.
How many of the Team GB bikes do you get to keep, or No,
we don't get any.
No, we
literally don't get any.
Where are all those bikes?
Well,
then?
Someone else is on them now. Yeah.
But there must be some bikes must be retired and being, you know, some
yeah. So actually,
safe
so,
place somewhere.
Well, no, they are literally they have gone. Like I've seen most of them leave the building. Like the London 2012 bikes gone.
And
yeah,
can you people buy
anymore.
Them or?
I don't know. I don't know
bikes?
What happens to them. I honestly
don't
know.
Elephant's graveyard.
Because the technology moves on every year, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And obviously your bike's going to be different size to Victoria's bike or someone else's bike. So,
and
because of the margin, the 1%, I imagine your bike is exactly the right size for you. So,
well, you say that they're not right. So the frame themselves aren't to you. Like, it's literally just extra small, small, medium, large, long.
Is that right? Even at the Olympics?
Yeah, but the bars, so you can pick your components. So like your bars can be the width that you want, but they're not made to you. And your helmet choice, you can choose what helmet you want to use. Saddle, you can choose that. But yeah, it's not specifically, I don't have a mould And so someone else is literally on mine now. Like, someone will be
right. But forgive me for asking the question, because it is, you know, cycling is famously, it's not even 1%, is it? It's 0.001% of marginal gains. Dave Brailsford.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Massively into marginal gains. You know, though, I think everyone thinks marginal gains is about equipment.
Right.
And it's the biggest thing that Dave B did was everything else. So, like, we had mattresses. He would make sure that that travelled the world with us. We would have...
I remember.
Like, really set... Like, he would
sleep
say...
Sleep is super important.
Sleep, yeah. We need to make sure you're sleeping at the right times. He would do everything else to make your life less stressful. And, I mean, I'm talking about anything. Like, if I rang him up and said... I don't know, the dog needs walking. I didn't have dogs at the time, but you know what I mean? He'd find someone to walk that dog.
Right. Like, no, just bad distractionlessness.
Yeah, just everything else to make it seamless. Like, so you're out, even your outside life, he would make sure that that work was working seamlessly.
And so now, so you are literally 10 days on from stopping training to an elite level.
Yeah.
You literally stopped training.
Yeah.
So your last training session, when perhaps you were going to go to Paris, that was 11 days ago.
Yeah.
What was that? And did you know it was your last training session?
I didn't know. No, it was actually a gym session. And I love the gym.
Right.
Like, that's always been the one bit. I think because it does take you away from the bike, it seems more fun.
Yeah.
And it was a gym session, yeah, and it was in my gym at home.
What was it? What were you doing?
Oh, well, deadlifts, leg press, squats, everything, yeah. And Monty was in there asleep in his pram.
Right, so you finished the gym session. What time did you finish the gym session about?
Just before school pickup, so about 2 o'clock.
Right, and then when after that did you have the moment of certainty that you were done?
Well, because I rang my agent and I just said, I want to announce that I'm retiring.
That night?
It was the following day. It was lunchtime the following day.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, that's interesting, isn't
it? I feel like they were possibly...
Giving me goosebumps. It's a big moment.
Yeah, yeah, it is, yeah. But like I said, I think because I had it in my head,
yeah,
it didn't seem... Because I didn't know, even talking about it, I was like, am I going to get upset? Because it is like it's an end point, isn't it?
It's a death.
Yeah.
No, but it is. It's...
Yeah, but then I've always sort of thought, there'll be something else afterwards,
yeah, yeah.
You know? Like, I like doing things like this.
Yeah.
Like, there'll be something. So I was just like, I don't want to see it as a... She's disappearing off the face of the earth. Like, because yesterday people were like, we miss you. And I'm like, I'm not dying. Like, please.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this is, sorry,
you're
career death. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there's a
yeah.
grieving process. Maybe not such a death, but it was a wrong turn of phrase. But because we heard last week you wanted to come on the show. You were said, you know, Dame Laura Kenny's available. Would you like to interview her?
Yeah.
Yes. She's going to make an announcement. Ooh, and we didn't know. We thought she's either retiring or she's announcing she's definitely going to Paris.
Okay.
So it could have been heads or tails.
Yeah, yeah.
And it is what it is.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Rachel's just left the studio. I was just going to ask Rachel to ask you about the 12 medals. Are the 12 medals still where we think they might be?
No, they're not.
Did that happen?
No.
Is that
I couldn't
a myth?
Actually. No, right. So we did have the frame. We got this frame in some shop in, we were on our honeymoon.
Alderley Edge or
this
somewhere.
Is when we got it. No, it was, why can't I remember? It was like down south somewhere and on the seaside. And we got the frame for it, only to then get the medals back and realise they didn't fit in it.
So people who don't know, the idea was what?
To put the 12 gold medals into a clock.
To make a clock out
yeah,
of it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, because there's not very many people that can do that, right?
Well, I don't think there's anybody
else. And we
else.
Were lucky enough that we had 12, so right. We could have done it.
So, yeah. But it never happened?
It never happened, no.
No!
If someone,
somebody
if,
out there will
yeah,
make you a frame that will...
If someone wants to make the frame,
yeah.
Then yeah. But I underestimated how big the medals were, basically. And the little round sockets for them, they don't fit in.
Wow.
I know a handyman called Mario. He will sort
He'll
that right out for you.
Okay.
When you're out for a bike ride,
yeah.
Right? Training, not training, whatever.
Yeah.
And like people might not recognise you because you've got a helmet on. It's like, you know, you don't recognise your own kids in a swim gala,
yeah.
Right? It's difficult to see someone. And then like somebody who like maybe fancies themselves, you know, like a proper mammal, you know.
You mean you? You mean you?
For the full lycra, the
okay.
full, you know, the full aero
right.
helmet.
Okay.
Fastest is now talking about himself. Here we go.
Overtakes you.
Okay, yeah.
You ever think, all right,
I mean,
watch this fella.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes.
Have you done
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I've done it, yeah, yeah.
Do you absolutely pace
them? I mean, yeah, I will time efforts. If someone overtakes me and I've got efforts to do in that ride, I'm like, okay,
what's
I'll
efforts?
Do one now.
What's efforts?
Well, so like a training, so it could be anything, to be honest. It could be like a 3 minute as hard as I physically
right.
can.
Okay.
Or like a 10 minute up. Like if someone overtakes me on the hill and I've gone to that hill to do some training
yeah.
efforts, I'll do it. Like, the minute they overtake it, I'm like, okay, I'll do it now.
We were talking about vomiting before, weren't we? But we weren't talking about upchucking. It's an acronym,
victim,
isn't it?
Victim of medical imaging technology.
Yeah, so some people get addicted to seeing if there's anything wrong with them.
Yeah.
Especially as they get older. And you said, oh, it's where I live, vomiting.
Yeah.
And I hear this story, lots of stories about, especially people weight training. Arnie Schwarzenegger came in and he talked about you weight train so much you end up throwing up because you're so exhausted. I've never been close to that. People do that with running. Middle distance runners do it a lot.
Yeah.
You say you've lived there for a while. Yeah. Do you have your own bucket?
Oh, I mean, honestly, there's so many photos of me being sick left, right, and centre.
And do you know it's going to happen?
Yeah, I do actually, yeah. The one time it caught me out, and it's actually quite embarrassing, was in Tokyo. And I sort of felt a little bit sick, but I thought, oh, I'll make it back to the pit, you know, where all the GB riders are. And Sir Brad was doing the punditry for BBC, and I literally throw up at his feet. It just caught me completely off guard. And I was just like, that's going to live with me forever, that. Like,
and
there's photos of it.
Yeah. And is it just physical exhaustion? Why does it happen?
So it's a build-up of lactic acid. Some people have it and some people don't. Like, right. I think if you can get yourself to that point. So, like, Katie Archibald and me, we're at the total different end. So, like, I can be sick and just doing half a lap because I can dig that deep. Like, I can go that hard.
Right.
Whereas because she's more of a diesel,
right,
she can't. Like, she's just
sick. I'm diesel plus plus. I've never even come close.
Also diesel.
I want to know what it feels like.
It's good though. Like, I like it. I don't even mind it. Like,
is it very cleansing?
Yeah, because, you know, I'm like, oh, I tried that hard.
Like, see, this is what I'm saying about cyclists. This is where we're going, isn't it?
I told you, there's a missing piece.
There's definitely a missing piece. But it's a missing piece where there's space for... it's not a missing piece. There's just space for you to be extraordinary in, I suppose.
Okay, yeah.
I think so.
Yeah. Well, I mean, someone has to be, I suppose.
What is it like to... Because we were talking the other day about the indoor championships at Glasgow the other week, which was brilliant, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, really good.
And we're saying about, like, they run 60 metres indoors as opposed to 100 metres outdoors.
Yeah.
But to be honest, all other runners are going, well, yeah, there's runners and then there's the sprinters. They don't really run because they're never exhausted, are they? You can't get exhausted.
Well, I mean, you can. Like, because if you're going to go that hot, I mean, I've seen Jason throw up plenty of times.
But they say sprinters, that you never see sprinters, after 100
metres. Okay, I know what you mean. Yeah, completely.
But middle distance runners look like they're going to die.
Yeah, well, middle distance is hard, though,
isn't it?
No, I know it is. Because it is a sprint, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a sprint, but you've got to keep going.
Yeah.
So what does it feel like to be that exhausted? What is it like?
I mean,
you
it's
feel
really
heady
hard.
Or?
Yeah, like, I can try that hard and then the minute I sit down, I could fall asleep. Like, if you said fall asleep right this second, I'd be like, all right, I'm done.
It's a really weird... in that case, because we were taken on this army assault course once by the army.
Okay.
And it was 13 minutes and I literally, exactly like you say, and I think I did collapse.
Yeah.
And I think they said, I remember hearing somebody say, get him up, get him up.
Yeah.
And then we went to the pub afterwards and had a lunch with it. We went out and I was exhausted for like 2 days after 13 minutes exercise.
Yeah, which is mad, isn't it? But it's that concept.
I never want to feel like that again. You're never going to feel like that again. How does it feel to know you're never going to feel like that again?
I know.
Or will you?
You say that, because I mean, I do want to do a marathon. You know how they say bike riders and runners just don't mix? But I do want to do a marathon. Yeah. Right. So maybe I will feel like that again.
All right.
I'm not sure.
Well, feel free to join us next year at the London Marathon. That'd be great. Or this year.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Are you doing it this year?
Yeah, 4 weeks on Sunday to go.
I reckon I could run it. Maybe. I might die.
Do you want to do it?
Yeah.
Do you actually?
I actually do, yeah.
All Shall right. I text Hugh Brasher right now?
No, I'll text Hugh Brasher right now. You had to get that in there. I will just sort this out. I'm going to do
it. Yeah, I'm being serious. I would genuinely run it.
I'm doing it.
Yeah. Is it on my birthday by any chance?
21st.
On 24th of April, so it's close. Oh, my God, I'm not going to be able to walk on my birthday, is it?
Okay. So we now know what you're doing next because you didn't announce your retirement on the show, but you announced your next elite event, which is the London Marathon.
Oh, my God, honestly.
The TCS London
shocked.
Marathon. They're going to be so thrilled. Do you think they'll let her in?
I think they probably will.
Hi, Hugh. Chris and Vassal's here. Yeah. You probably haven't got space for her, but do you know Dame Laura Kenny? Just announced. Yeah, she wants to run the London Marathon. You up for that?
Please.
Oh, go on.
Pretty please.
Should we phone him up now? Should we actually phone him up?
Yeah, go on.
Let's phone him up on the air.
Oh, my God. This is actually mental. You even have the ability to do this.
Here we go. Hugh. There you go. Let's phone him up.
Will he actually answer?
Oh, I don't know. We'll see. He listens to the show all the time. Not all the time, but...
Chris, how are you?
Hugh, I'm great. We're live on the air. Is that okay with you?
Yes, that's fine.
Okay. Dame Laura Kenny is sitting opposite me now. You know she announced her retirement yesterday?
I do know.
Guess what the next thing she would like to do is?
Oh, that would be amazing. She's going to come run the London Marathon in our 45th, next year, in our 45th year.
No, this year.
Oh, that's a little bit tricky.
Should we carry this conversation off the air now?
That really is a little bit tricky. We will be delighted to welcome her next year. She's the most amazing, amazing athlete.
You know she's got 5 gold medals?
I think she might have 6, isn't it?
No,
5.
I've got 6 medals, 5 golds, 1
medals,
silver.
Yeah,
she's got a silver. All right, well, I took a chance and... there you go.
I love the chance, Chris. I love the chance. And Laura, we would so love you to be on the start line 1 year.
Oh, okay. Yeah, deal. Then I'll do it next year. At least that means I can actually train.
Deal. You're in. You're in. That's live
thanks.
On air. You're in.
Okay thanks.
45th year. It's our 45th race. Brilliant. Thanks, Chris. Thanks, Laura.
All right, have a nice day.
Thank you.
Cheers then.
Bye. God, it's tough school, isn't it?
they really do have a hard deadline. It's something like
it's so tough.
Late Jan.
They let us in, but not Dame Laura. No, it's because of the time thing, isn't it? They can't slip people in at the last minute.
Wow. Okay, well, at least I have time to train
then.
Well,
I tried.
Yeah, oh, thanks.
But you are hoping to go to Paris in some capacity.
Yes, I mean, I hope so. Yeah. I mean, like
well,
I said...
Well, don't leave it to me to sort out because it's never going to happen in that case.
I could get you into Manchester.
I mean, it's closer
exactly,
to home.
Yeah, run home after.
And so you're going back up north now?
Later today. Yeah.
Well, listen, congratulations. Thank you for all the smiles you've given us, all the joy, all those moments in front of the telly where we're all screaming, you know, for you and for Jason and for the rest of Team GB. Do you know who's a dead cert for us this year?
Well, I mean, obviously the qualification doesn't finish until end of April, but I mean, the women's team pursuit team are currently world champs. So, I mean, they're obviously going to, although actually I'm saying that out loud, you can only actually have 4 go to the Olympics and there was 5 that rode the world championships.
Yes.
So obviously one of them might not necessarily go. But I mean, if I was to put any money on a medal, it would be the women's team pursuit team.
Wow, there you go. Cool, you heard it here first. All right, Laura, thank you so much. By the way, Laura is very busy on Instagram, especially at the moment, @LauraKenny31 on Instagram. Give our love to Jason.
Oh, I will do.
Love
thanks.
To the family.
Thank you.
And anytime you're down and around, please come and see us.
Oh, thanks.
All right, cheers, Laura.
Thank you.
Can we have a studio and control room combined round of applause for Dame Laura Kenny? Yeah. Woo! All right, come on!
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Love music? Love interviews with lovely musicians? Search Virgin Radio UK on YouTube to find brilliant album specials with some of the shiniest lights on our playlist, including George Ezra.
This is going to be something I'll remember, and that's a really lovely thing. I don't think I was able to do that in the past.
And James Bay. Come on, let
it go. Don't you agree that everybody needs someone when they feel alone?
Watch all that and more at youtube.com/Virgin Radio UK.
He's one of your favourite comedians and TV presenters, and he's one of your favourite comedians and TV presenters. Together, they investigate the weirdest and worst ever Premier League footballer. Episode 1 of the new podcast, 53 Minutes, is out now. So please welcome the delightful Dara O'Brien and wonderful Josh Whittaker.
Yeah, I wonder where that intro was going for a second or two, and so did each of our guests. Good morning, Dara.
Good morning.
Good morning, Josh.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you so much. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. Very good.
You're looking younger. Mm. Couldn't look any younger.
Do you think? I shaved especially for this.
Why?
Well, you know, you've got to put an effort in.
When did you shave before that last? A year ago?
Yeah. I shave twice a week.
Do you?
Yeah.
All right, good. Right, so this is called 53 Minutes. I didn't know what it was about until I started to listen to it, and I thought, oh, that's interesting. So 53 Minutes, it's going to be a 53-minute episode per week podcast about you two being hilarious forever. But it's not, is
no,
it?
No, it's not.
53
no.
Minutes is sort of, it's pivotal to the whole narrative of what has to be a one-off series.
Yes, it is. It's one story yep. about and sort of quite a legendary story to a certain extent, but that could only have happened in this exact moment in the Premier League's history when it was all still a bit ropey and dodgy and we were thrown together.
Yeah,
it's all super slick now. But a guy whose name we now know to correctly call Ali Jha, but everyone football sports known as Ali Dia or Ali Dyer. Blagged his way onto the Southampton team, was put on as a sub for one match and was yoinked again 53 minutes later and never played again. And it's how he blagged his way on and who the guy was and where he came from and where he went to after that.
So when the sub subbed, usually, you know, there's a rat to be smelt, but this was a whole horde of rats.
It's a heist movie. Do you know what I mean? It's a man who has worked, who's pulled off the ultimate hoax. He's managed to... he phoned up and the mystery is, did he phone up? Who phoned up? But Graham Souness, the manager of Southampton, gets a phone call.
When was this?
1996.
Right.
The height of TFI Friday.
Yeah, and the Euros.
And the Euros.
We've had a chat about it, let me tell you.
And Graham Souness gets a call from George Weah, the World Footballer of the Year, who says, I've got a cousin who's good at football. Would you give him a trial? And Graham Souness is like, well, it's George Weah, it's the World Footballer of the Year. Of course I will. This guy shows up, he trains for a bit, but there's an injury crisis at Southampton, so he gets put on the bench, and then their best player, Matt Letizia, gets injured during the match, so he ends up on the pitch in a Premier League game for 53 minutes.
Right.
And everyone's kind of, in football, has heard this kind of story, but this is the first time it's kind of really, what happened? What's the truth behind this? Who is this man? Where did he come from? Where did he go? I didn't mean that in a... and what happened to him and how did it happen?
Because we're not totally sure. And I think the debate raised within the podcast, if this is a heist movie, as you say, if he pulled off a really good number, or he was someone who just got over-promoted to a position he wasn't ready for. And in either way, he's living the dream.
Liz Truss of football.
Yeah, like he did. And we all kind of go, you know, if you just give me a run out once, if you put me in the centre forward position for Man City, I'd score. You know, I'd probably
how
found
hard
it eventually.
Can it be?
How hard could it possibly be? It turns out quite hard.
But when you're surrounded by 10 amazing players, you think, well, I could probably get away with
it. Yeah, exactly.
The answer is, you can get away with it for 53 minutes.
Is that about it?
Yeah.
And then, yoink. And then you're off the same game.
Because you can get called out in the end by people around who do what you're pretending to do for a living or in an office pool or somewhere like that. But he was training with the team and they still didn't... Surely you'd spot it in training. What have you found out about that?
There was a period of time, he wasn't with them for very long beforehand, and it was a perfect storm of stuff wasn't as slick, there wasn't sufficient due diligence, there was an emergence of African nations and African footballers after the World Cup that had just happened, that suddenly was like, well, this is an entire untapped continent of incredible talent that we don't know anything about.
We've struck oil.
Absolutely. And then... So they thought, well, this could be an undiscovered, this could be a gem that we've just found. And they had an injury crisis. And suddenly they had no other choice but to put somebody on.
But best not to find out about it by putting him on in a Premier
League
fixture.
In an actual game.
No, exactly. Yeah. And then also it's kind of, he could have scored. Do you know what I mean?
Imagine if he had scored. Imagine if he'd have just had a couple of touches and really got away with it.
Well, I suppose that there's everyone... in any industry has worked with someone where they go, this person hasn't got it.
Oh, yeah.
This person.
And our fair yeah. issue, we
can
look at your list
CV of Fred on camera four.
But there's also that thing of, would I be able to get away with this? Do you know what I mean? What would happen if it happened now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Would social media, has that destroyed it, or has just the
because it was it almost didn't get mentioned again. The and it was a local journalist. Yeah, it was a local journalist who went, that was a bit strange last week, wasn't it?
And then so that is so interesting.
No national papers picked up on it. No one was kind of clocked.
So the episode one starts with Matt Letizia, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, was he at the game? Did he?
He was the injured player.
Yeah, he had to come off to make way.
Because he had an issue with his thigh, didn't he, or a hip or something?
Yeah.
He got a knock in the game.
So he was the one that was subbed.
Yeah.
So their best player, their only good player, gets injured, and they bring on a fake footballer, basically.
It's one of the best stories ever.
It's unbelievable, isn't it?
It's a phenomenal story.
Is it? Does anybody lose it here as a win-win? I mean,
I think it's win-win.
It's all win-win.
Yeah. And the other thing is that Souness has never spoken about it.
Of course he has.
Yeah. And in an industry where people do, they have an entire career, entire extracurricular after dinner career.
Yeah, yeah.
He has, and he's done an autobiography. He's done that. Has never spoken about it until. Until we dig into this.
All right, go on.
Was he this George guy's cousin?
No. We don't. The phone call thing. No one knows
who made the phone call. Presumably, it was him.
Yeah.
He phoned up. Went, I'm George such and such, and my cousin is a really good footballer.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's not like there was. You imagine the media landscape at the time. It wasn't like people going, "That's not George Weah's voice." No one knew what George Weah sounded like. Any kind of African accent. We don't even have the same country even as George. I don't think he was even Liberian. So it's a he just picked.
He's got front.
Yeah. No. There's a brass neck element.
I think you've got to admire this.
Yeah, absolutely.
You'd have to be one of the most kind of pompous people in the world to think, oh, that's a shame. Do you know what I mean?
It's a bit like Eddie the Eagle, a bit. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's a bit like, is it Guy Gomer, the guy who went in for the interview in the BBC for a job and then ended up on air?
No, that wasn't his fault. He was there to pick somebody up.
He was.
And he just got put on the set.
Put on air.
It's a bit like Chauncey Gardner, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's absolutely a bit like.
What's Chauncey Gardner?
Chauncey Gardner.
Chauncey Gardner. Oh, being there. We'll watch it in the DVD in the car to the next one.
Okay.
Legendary Peter Sellers film.
Yeah.
It's very sort of, it's a bit Trump-esque.
Yes, it is.
It's a bit Forrest Gumpy as well.
Yeah, it is.
It's. I think obviously I'd say there's less negatives than the Trump story, but it's more heartwarming. But there is a feeling of, you know, that thing of getting away with it. It's that thing that people always say. You know, if you put on a high viz, you can kind of walk into anywhere. Do you know what I mean? The people who steal the painting, they don't go in at night, do they? They just go in the day, dressed like they work.
Plain sight,
and it's that.
It's like if there's an international golf tournament, if there's like one of the majors or something like that going on, if you pick up a pair of headphones from an old secondhand shop, a pair of headphones, right, and an old walkie-talkie, and just wear that, especially with the blue high-vis. Which isn't a high vis, it's a vis, isn't it? Because it's blue. You can get under the ropes at any golf tournament because people just think you work for the BBC.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
Right. I'll try that.
Headphones, very handy.
Right.
All right, so were there any... I mean, it's just... Because it's such a big... It's a one big fat surprise anyway.
Yeah.
And you've chunked it up into six eps. By the way, we're talking about this podcast, 53 minutes. It's an amazing story. You know, were there any surprises within the overall headline... fantasy of this fantastic story.
He has more of a history in and out of lower level football than you think.
Yeah, you can chat. We found his journey.
So he's better than any of us at football.
Yeah, that's the thing.
I mean, I've not seen Vassos play, but definitely.
you speak to that. Is it a Finnish baggage handler?
Right.
He's like Finnair have organised this sort of slightly amateur team for their employees, and he pitches up there. And he's not quite good enough for that kind of amateur team in Finland. Yeah. So he's not that good at football, is he?
No.
Ali
no,
he's athletic, he can run.
Yeah, that's the thing. I suppose physically, were any of us to show up, he's built like a sportsman. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he's got that. But I think the thing that turns up is that we have, for the first time, Graham Souness.
Yeah, I was going to say, well done. I mean, that's the scoop, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Because in a way, it's all a sort of preamble and a prelude to the Graham Souness moment, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's, and it's...
Right, who got Graham to say yes?
I would say the producers. Yeah.
Quite the, we don't have the heft
well,
to
do well Graham. Well done, though,
yeah.
Because...
Yeah,
yeah. The thing with Graham Souness is if you don't... Because I think, like, obviously, if you like football, this is really interesting. But even if you don't, it's like a hoax and a heist and stuff. But Graham Souness, if you're kind of not aware of him, is the scariest man in the history of football. He was, like, an enforcer on the pitch.
Yeah.
I think his first game as manager of Rangers, he was player-manager, he got sent off as player when he was the manager. He's been an intimidating manager, pundit, player. So to hoax Graham Souness and then...
Of all the people to hoax. Of all the people to hoax.
Yeah, Anton Deck haven't been there yet.
No, exactly. Graham Souness...
He's mellowed somewhat.
He has. He's more charming now about things, but there's a flintiness to him still. There was a...
Flintiness.
There's a Liam Brady, legendary footballer Liam Brady, told me a story recently that he was in Italy, living in Italy, and he moved from one city to another, and Graham was moving to that city. Like, at a time when there were very few foreign players played in the Italian leagues, Graham got picked up to play for one of the clubs there, and Liam said, "I will sure you take our flat. That's the flat that we've been living in, young family, kids and all. So that's our flat. You can take that, like whatever." So he handed over that to the flat to Graham. The next time he saw Graham was on the pitch where their two teams played.
Yeah.
And the first thing Graham did was hack him down, like going straight in, 2 foot challenge, cut him down.
Well, maybe there were mice in the flat.
No. What happened was when the moving company took Liam's stuff, they took the curtains and the light bulbs out, and Graham arrived and there was no curtains and light bulbs. And Graham held that grudge sufficiently long to hack down Liam Brady the next time he saw him. So I mean, I've had that urge when I've moved into a house and there's been no light bulbs in. I think that's ridiculous. Yeah. But
there's no need for that, is there?
Yeah, there's no need to
do that. By the way, if anybody's done that, can you just WhatsApp us anonymously and say what is that about? How do you feel? Do you get light bulb removers regret?
And when you moved to the new house, did those light bulbs configure correctly? Or do we definitely have spare light bulbs that you can
Where are you on curtains? Because if they're nice curtains, you own the curtains, don't you?
Well, you have to negotiate fixtures and fittings. So if you're buying somewhere or renting somewhere, you don't automatically
Rachel
come with
took
all
the light bulbs. That's what's coming across.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, if you want it, you've got to list it.
But it also, scabby curtains, because you leave scabby curtains, don't you?
Yeah, I know. But still, some blinds or something like that, whatever is grand.
No, I can with you all the way. Hardest footballers. So Mick Hartford, I heard he was the hardest footballer. So he played for Watford, didn't he? I know Vinnie Jones told me this story himself, and I said to Vinnie back in the day, I said, hardest footballer you've ever played against is Mick Hartford. Like, before I'd even finished the question, everybody will agree it's Mick Hartford. I said, well, give me an example. He said, well, I gave him a bit of physical on the pitch, Wimbledon against Watford in the first half, and Mick Hartford said, "I'll see you at half time." So Vinny is now hugely regretting what he's just done on the pitch to Mick Hartford. He's trying to make his mark as a young physical player, but you just don't cross Mick, or you didn't cross Mick Hartford. So I said, "Well, what are you expecting?" He said, "Well, I thought he's going to come into the Wimbledon dressing room and just offer me out." And I said, "Well, is that what happened?" He said, no, he offered the whole team out. He said, "Right, it's his fault, all of you now." And apparently he meant it.
Oh, my word.
I know. Oh, my Delicious. Word and some.
I'm not made for football. So, I wouldn't want to hoax my way on.
You love football, though.
Yeah, but I wouldn't like the physical side of it.
It's not so much like that anymore, is it? It's very.
I think it's still it. When you go to a game, you're near.
Shoulder bargey. I've been very into. So all three of our boys play football, and so now they're like 11, 13, 14. So they're getting bigger. And I'm always a bit like, is that not a foul? I mean,
that's your dream, is the mums by the side of the pitch.
Well, I just find
in.
I'm like, it's supposed to be non-contact. It's very, very contact.
I say ref.
Well, I just find it very... I get where you're coming from, John.
I was watching
very bargey.
I was watching the Man United-Liverpool game on Sunday. Let's not talk about the score. And I was thinking about it. So the referee dressed in black, right, as always. And I understand why, but I was thinking, it's a bit funereal.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? For the ref.
Yeah.
It'd be nice if he was in a he or she wearing jauntier colours. But yeah, I understand why, because, you know, I think because it's about them fading into the background, isn't it? Because there's that, they had that issue.
Well, they should wear green then.
Well, because
they have worn different colours.
Yeah, but Goalies used to wear green, oh, yeah, didn't they, all the time? I don't know why Goalies used to wear green all the time, because it was all green.
You have the same position with, say, riot police. You go, this is very down, what you're wearing. No, why you lift the mood? With
I think
like...
riot police, you know, that is sort of my point, because riot police are called riot police.
Yeah.
The referee, you know, you just, oh, give him a break.
He's, well, I bet, you know, he feels like he's riot police sometimes.
Yeah,
on the,
no, exactly.
Pitch.
But he's the ref, and, you know, I think refs are great. Mostly they're pretty good now, aren't they? I would say referees.
Yeah, I feel a bit sorry for them, because you only notice if you make a mistake. Yeah.
Unless you're Mark Clattenburg and you now referee Gladiators.
Oh, what a gig that is.
The best gig.
Can I point out that I had a conversation once with a former teammate of mine when we were chatting to these two women who I said, oh, well, I play for... Yeah, this is Gaelic football, which is a rougher sport, I suppose, in some ways. And we're chatting to these two who have been in a bar. And and he says, yeah, you. And he points to me and goes, do you remember that time that somebody was niggling at you and then when the ball went up the other end, you just flattened him, like one punch? And... this did not happen. It wasn't me. He clearly misremembered me. But a look of admiring glances from everyone around me.
Admiring glances.
I went with it. Well, if you push a man, he's going to tell. I'm the most dorky, gentle player you've ever seen in a very physical
football?
Sport. Oh, yeah, yeah.
I would think, because I'm an idiot, I would think that Gaelic football is impossible to play gently.
Yeah, okay, but relatively, I was doing, but still, I wasn't, you know, punching people.
I love watching. Why don't we have more Gaelic football on?
You will.
British
it'll
team.
Be. It'll be back on during the summer on the BBC show for the first
great.
Time. Yeah, it was on the net. It was.
Because Aussie rules football is not dissimilar.
Yeah, they're born from the same thing. It's essentially Irish lads went over there and created it.
Rugby played by the skinniest, fittest, leanest people in the world, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy.
And then, look, then once we get you on the Gaelic football, then we bring out the hurling with the sticks.
Oh, that's insane.
That is a sport. No, that totally is a sport.
Okay, yeah. All right. Okay, so it's like when, what's his name? The mixed martial arts, Floyd Mayweather.
Oh, Conor McGregor.
Conor.
Yeah.
Conor McGregor, so mixed martial artist against amazing flyweight, lightweight
boxer. Oh, yeah,
boxer,
yeah, yeah.
Right,
yeah,
okay,
yeah.
So... the fittest, leanest, meanest lacrosse team,
right,
yeah, up against the fittest, meanest, leanest Gaelic football team. Who wins?
Oh, the Gaelic football team. I mean, we're drawing from a bigger pool of players.
Are there fitter athletes on the planet?
I presume there are, but these are also amateur athletes.
No,
so
I know,
not,
but they run.
And it's
like
up and, it's a big pitch, a much bigger pitch than a soccer pitch, and they're up and down all the time.
Right? They're like the human equivalent of gliders, you know, lighter than air aircraft.
Right, okay, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
The Gaelic football
power to weight. But
it is kind of a thing in Ireland that there's a young generation of lads who are like really professionally fit.
I can sense another series coming up. But I don't know what. Is there a mythical Gaelic football story you get to the...
there's hundreds of great Gaelic football. Oh, there are many great
okay,
Gaelic football.
It's a better question for an Irishman. Is there not a mythical story about Gaelic football?
Oh, we've made everything mythical.
Is there
mythical?
A factual story about Gaelic football that you can investigate?
Oh, yeah, no, what we know for Ireland is making stories mundane and dragging them down like whatever.
We've slipped over to Ireland now.
Yeah.
How has it been the last few days as an Irishman?
It was funny because I said to my wife, it's not a really big deal, Paddy's Day. And she said, you were out Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then you had a lunch on Sunday. So it was a good Paddy's
and
weekend.
And you had Oppenheimer as well.
Oh yeah. Oh no. Like that's all. Oh, Killian doing it. Oh, that's all.
Well, it was Sunday. It was Sunday, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Killian wins the Oscar.
Yeah.
And the
kicks
other
off the week. The
rugby
was very good.
Rugby, yeah. Cheltenham Festival.
Yeah. The whole thing. You know. So we don't need much of an excuse.
Oh, look, we don't need. No.
You've become more Irish in the last minute.
I can dial it up or dial it down.
Josh, let's get back on the message, shall we? Podcast 53 minutes, episode 1 out now. From wherever you get your podcast. Give us the headlines again for people just tuning in.
It's the greatest story ever told about a footballer. It's the most, because it, and it's the dream we've all got. It's a hoax. It's a trick. It's a man who could be any of us who ended up playing a Premier League match.
I once played football in a team of 11 with 9 current England players.
I watched that. Was it at Torquay United?
Yeah, it was.
I was at that game.
Wes Saunders' testimonial.
Yeah, I've got the programme for that game. That was insane. That was like you, John Barnes, Paul Gascoigne,
Peter Beardsley,
Chris Waddle.
Chris Waddle.
Did you last 53 minutes?
I was the guy. I was the sub that should have been sub, but
that
somehow got to stay out. It was
incredible.
And they all turned up for Wes Saunders, this legend.
Yeah.
That was some day. And
were they doing? My impression would be that they are doing things, moving in directions that you're not. You're going.
It's like Chris dominated
with nine
the
Jedis.
Game.
Yeah,
it's
and
Jedi
going,
football.
Why didn't you know that I was going to run left out? I didn't know you were going to run left out.
I made so many mistakes in that game. Yeah. It was not funny. I just did all the wrong things.
I seem to remember it was like 7-5 or something, wasn't it?
It was something.
I don't remember who you were playing against, but your team was.
We were
like
playing against
Torquay.
A Pompey All Stars, because it was Wes's team, because he was Pompey captain, wasn't he?
Torquay.
Torquay. Where were we playing?
You were at Torquay.
We were at Torquay. I can't remember. There you go. I wasn't even there. I was watching it with you somewhere.
The greatest thing I suggest every time is that in the 100 metres final of the Olympics, there should be a lane left over and you should just draw somebody from the crowd. And you should just have them run alongside. I was once at Chris Hoy, because you had Laura in today, who is an utter legend. Thank and you. I just missed her. What a star, right? Yeah. But he said, you must come down. He bumped into me. You must come down to the velodrome. You're going, you are. Because a normal person on a bike in a velodrome is just really, really slowly.
On last leg, we did Johnny Peacock, the gold medal winning Paralympian, against Adam Hills. We did 100 metres.
Yeah.
And Adam's quite sporty. Like, he plays.
He's a rugby player, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a rugby player and he was a really good tennis player. And you think he's like a good runner. And then the moment you see someone who actually. You just. Suddenly, the person who's not the athlete is flailing.
Yeah.
You can just see. The person who runs, it's like a piston. It's like an absolute machine.
Well, if you take 100 yards of Eliud Kipchoge's fastest marathon and try and run 100 yards, you won't be able to do it. And they had a travelator at the running expo at XL.
Oh, yeah, I've seen videos of that.
Where it was constantly moving at Eliud Kipchoge's marathon pace. And Mo Farah tried to get on it and was flung back off it. So that's how fast Eliud Kipchoge runs a marathon. It's ridiculous, isn't
it? I like that, Dara. Just a bit of context. Because you see the Olympic final, they're all in about the same second for 100 metres. And we think, well, that's lovely. But if you or I were there and we'd be at 50 metres when they're at the finish, you'd think, that's how good they really are.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's the same in golf. You know, we all think we can play golf or some, you know, you can hit a decent shot. But when a professional golfer hits a golf ball, say off the tee, it goes to this point in the air, which your greatest shot would peak there and start to come down. And the point where that happens with your ball is the point that their ball really takes off and changes trajectory, goes to an acute angle. It goes, and you go, you can hit a golf ball like that as well if you want to.
Same with comedy. We're highly trained professionals.
Hang on a minute. He's right here, isn't he?
Yeah, no one's good at the start of stand-up. It takes 2 years of being rubbish.
I did mean it as a joke. Anyway, you know, it's just talking.
just flexing.
Yeah, just
flexing.
Back off, right?
Oh, dear. All right. Okay, podcast 53 minutes, episode 1 out now. How did you two get together?
Oh, this look, somebody rang and said, who knows? It wasn't our thought process. I mean, it's delight, but, you know, he said, who knows? We're never in charge of this stuff. The, call came in.
Yeah. And then is any more? Any other stories?
Well, do you know what would be the joy would be if Ali Jah was to enjoy this podcast so much that he thought, I'll stick my head out and I'll do an interview.
Well, where's the mystery there?
Well, it's he's kept. He's been very discreet. He's never, you know, much like.
Why wouldn't you? You've got to come and take a bow, haven't you?
He's very much the Kate Middleton of his time. He's just disappeared. That's it. He won't be appearing again. Done. Just said that's it. I'm out of public life now. You can get photographs in the back of his head.
Well, the producers, they must have had a look.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So where did they think
and
he...
spoke to people who have spoken to him as well.
Oh, yeah.
There is a dialogue, Banksy, isn't it? There's a dialogue that features in a later episode of them trying to get Ali to agree to it.
Right.
That
and not getting somebody is sometimes better than getting them.
Well, that's what we're telling you.
Yeah. But
I think
it's the mystery remains, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You've got Graham's side of the story. Does Ali want to sell?
Is it even better as an enigmatic that he's never appeared? Like, yeah.
Well, it's great. Well done. Congratulations.
Thank
it's
you
like
very
Banksy.
Much.
Another fun thing to do with your life. Yeah. Isn't it great?
Exactly.
Do you want to plug anything else while you're here?
Did a couple of documentaries at Channel 5, did the pyramids, going to a solar eclipse in 2 weeks' time in America.
Excellent.
Which is properly ticking off a bucket list.
And you might see one because it's in America.
Yeah, we're hoping because we're going to go to, it's crossing over Texas, so we're going to go to Austin.
You're film
we're
it?
Hoping, like, whatever. Absolutely, yeah. And we're going to an event that the producer said, oh, it's a NASA event. Also, the event will be the singer from Talking Heads. And I went,
what?
David Byrne, you mean? You mean David? You just say David
what?
Byrne. You don't say the singer from Talking Heads.
Oh, but
the, yeah. Oh, is that more exciting to you than the eclipse?
What? Yeah, of course David Byrne's more impressive than the eclipse.
Oh,
I've seen David Byrne and I've seen an eclipse and there's only one I enjoyed.
You didn't? How you do now?
I went to New York to watch David Byrne. The eclipse came to Devon and I looked up and that was it.
Was this his talking tour?
This was the tour where it was... No, this was him... What was it called? The American Utopia tour.
Right, because apparently he did this talking tour, didn't he? Which was had songs as well, but it was the greatest thing that you've ever seen live and I didn't see it.
The American Utopia one, which Spike Lee made into a movie, is absolutely incredible.
Oh, we have photographic evidence. We were there. Talkie United,
oh,
1999.
There we go. Look at that.
Signing the back of a programme.
You haven't changed a bit.
Oh, shut up. All right, we've got to go. We don't have to go, but I'm choosing to go. Thank you very much. Thank you, Dara Brea, Josh Whittaker.
Thank you very much.
Grand round applause, Rachel Hall versus Alexander. Tuesday, the 19th of March. You were excellent. Thank you so much.
Love the 80s? Then you'll love Virgin Radio 80s Plus.
Love Chris Evans. Love the 80s.
Over on Virgin Radio.
80s Plus.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.